Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for calling in this morning. This morning we're going to talk about something that, believe it or not, I really had some difficulties in getting the kind of information I was looking for. I had it in my head that I'd be able to find some information about different crimes throughout the years where the person who committed the crimes was caught in the act, mostly because lately there's been a lot of talk and a lot of shots of the young man, what was his name, Holmes, that James Holmes, who went into the Colorado movie theater and killed 12 people and injured 58. And, I mean, he admitted to what he did. He was caught in the act. In most cases, I found out that in a lot of scenarios, the murderer killed themselves. After their killing spree, they turned the gun on themselves. So it makes you wonder if in our psyche we figure, okay, I'm caught and I'm never going to get out of this, so we take our own life, or if we can convince people that even though we've been caught and they know that we are the ones who committed this atrocious crime, if I don't take my life and I just stand here and look at everybody like, what do you want from me? They'll think I'm crazy. So what happens then is then there's this huge trial with mega bucks spent on people trying to defend this person and people trying to get this person, either give him a death sentence or have him put in prison for the rest of his life. I did try to see what an average trial costs, and that is so variable that it's hard to even pinpoint. But I'm sure trials through the years, like O.J. Simpson and the one that's going on here in the state of Florida with John Goodman, who was a known drinker, which of course probably went against him, being a known drinker and being a part of the circle of resorty restaurant clubs and things like that. Most of those people imbibe, and most of those people are a part of that world. But he had a bad reputation, so that played against him. But he also has lots of money, so he's able to keep paying people to defend him. So his trial has gone on now, 2 years, maybe 3 years? I'm not even sure anymore. A long time. And then, of course, you have, you have the man that we talked about earlier this year who held the women in his home in Cleveland. And he didn't claim insanity, although he did say, I don't know what's wrong with me. But once he got put in prison, he killed himself. So it's a strange world out there. But it would seem like the people that are in charge would take charge. And the people that are in charge would realize that they are being played. I don't know about the rest of you parents out there, but I, at a very young age, realized how easy it was for my kids to play me. Turn on the tears, get indignant. At a very young age, we learn how to convince people that we didn't do it. So it is tough to try somebody who stands their ground and says, absolutely, I didn't do this. But I'm also reminded of the case of my own grandchild. Those boys were caught that day, witnesses. I mean, you know, hands down, they did what they were accused of. And yet, we still had a two-week-long trial that dragged out over, this week, it will be 4 years since my grandson was hurt. So it's a strange thing, this set of rules that we've set up in order to protect the victim and the perpetrator. In a sense of fairness, originally you were supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. And that's all right if you didn't get caught in the act. That's the way it should be. But if you really got caught in the act, and it is what it is, then it should be cut and dried. There shouldn't be, in a time when we're crying poverty, our government is shut down, and we're going through all the other things that we're going through. Does it really seem, professional, organized, well thought out to be spending money on somebody who should be either, well, one judge said, yes, he's, I will accept an insanity plea. So if you know he's insane, and the definition of insane is that you no longer are in charge of your faculties, so then why is he going to court? All of this stuff, it lends itself to one thing, ridicule, for another thing, assessment about what are we thinking. All the people that are in a courtroom get paid all day. And if they're taking care of something that's already, right there in your face, other things could go before it. When I started looking up how many murderers are on death row, I was shocked. And some of them are there for years and years and years. What's the deal with that? Why do we do that? If they've been found guilty, they've been put on death row, why do they sit there forever? I'm sure there's reasons that somebody has written on a sheet of paper. But really, why are they still sitting there? If we've decided that this is what we want to do and this is who we are as a people, and it's an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, then why are they still sitting there after all these years? I don't get it. I don't understand it. But it just shows you more and more how antiquated all these things that have been set up for so many years since the 1800s, a lot of them have been written in books, and we're still using those. They no longer even pertain to us, let alone help us. I'm going to bring Shelley in before I read the article about James, so that we can really discuss what's going on with him. Because, like I said, it's the only recent trial I could find that points to the point I'm trying to make. So let's bring Shelley in. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you?
Doing good. Sorry I got into the show so late. I actually started calling before 7 o'clock, but I never got any connection. It just kept ringing and ringing. So I must have hung up 4 times and called back in. Did you have any trouble getting into the show this morning?
I didn't. It went through easily, but my computer is strange this morning.
Okay.
But the show, I got my dashboard real easy this morning.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, you have the important one anyway. You need to get the show up and running.
Well, it's nice to start when we're supposed to, that's for sure.
Right.
I think that this this ended up really throwing me for a loop, because I started investigating this yesterday and thought I would find a lot more, I don't know, a lot more stories, a lot more information. I did realize when I said that I wanted to talk about the people who were caught in the act, there have been a lot in history. And, of course, most of the time, I didn't find any statistics. Like, I usually can find all kinds of statistics where different places have actually done counts and things like that. I didn't find anything like that that says, you know, this many people were caught with the smoking gun in their hand and this is what happened. But it appears as though during the research is that most of the people that get caught either get shot during the altercation by a policeman or by someone protecting the other people, or they shoot themselves. So it appears as though there's not a lot that really happens. I did find a lot of women who were responsible for the death of their children. And, of course, we did a show about that a while back. And that just still goes on every day, and sometimes it's all over the front page and sometimes it's hidden away. But that goes on all the time, which kind of breaks my heart, but it is going on all the time. And obviously there's many reasons for that. We talked about all those. But I want to read this article. This was on CNN all the way back on June 30th. And so far, nothing else has really happened yet. He's kind of on hold. They expect him to be in court in February of 2014. And little side notes, the judge said the jury won't be sequestered and they can use cell phones and laptops outside the court. And the other newest thing is James himself will wear a harness that the jury can't see that actually restrains him to the floor, because that's how wary everybody is of his behavior. Now,
wow.
Again, now, and
now,
a
who,
judge.
Who are you talking about? James who?
James Holmes. He's the young man that walked in to the Colorado movie theater when they were showing The Dark Knight, I think was the name of it. And shot
right.
12 people,
right.
And he wounded like 58 people.
Wow.
But so let me read this, and then we'll talk about this. And I'm sorry that he's the only real open case that I could find that pertains to what we're talking about. But this is a really big subject, and I do believe that eventually we will have to talk about this again, but I'll continue researching and until we find some more answers. Colorado theater shooting suspect James Holmes will wear a hidden harness under his clothes to restrain him during his trial, which will have the largest jury pool in state history. Holmes is accused of killing 12 people and wounding dozens more in an Aurora movie theater. He will wear the harness, which will be anchored to the floor because of the violent nature of his alleged crimes, a judge said. Judge Carlos Seymour Jr. will send out 5,000 jury summons and expects at least 3,200 people will end up in court, he ruled on Thursday. That would mean each of the 450,000 Arapahoe County residents eligible for jury duty would have a 1 in 90 chance of being called for this one case. That's pretty high rate. The idea is to bring in 800 prospective jurors at a time on Thursdays and Fridays early next year, a process that McCallum says could take 3 to 4 weeks. Now, on that note, because of the past few years, I never realized that, I've been called in, I've gotten a subpoena to be a jurist, and now you just call in, and you call in for 3 days in a row, And if 3 days in a row they don't tell you to come in, you're off the hook again for a while. If they do ask you to come in, then sometimes that doesn't mean you're going to sit on the jury. It just means that you may sit in the jury room, in the pool, they call it. Don't get a vision of a beautiful blue pool and floaties and drinks with umbrellas in them. It's not that kind of pool. And they sit there and they wait and they bring in like 10 at a time. And both sides of the case, including the judge, get to ask questions of each juror. And as they narrow it down, more people are invited in to ask questions, including the families. We were allowed to ask people questions during the choosing of the jurists. So it is a pretty organized, a pretty structured way of choosing the jurors. And a lot of people think that there's always 12 jurors. That's no longer true. Now there are 6, and 2 are backup in case something happens to one or two of them. Those thousands will be winnowed, I never even heard of that word, down to 12 men and women for the start of the trial, which is set to begin February 3rd. It is expected to last 4 months. The judge has accepted the suspect's insanity plea. Now, this puts out another question. If he accepted the insanity plea, then why are we doing this? If he's crazy, he's crazy. So that's not clear to me. Do you have any idea why they would do that, Shelley? Accept an insanity plea and still have a trial?
Well, see, it's just a plea. So what they're going to do is they're going to go up in front of the jury and they're going to claim insanity and they're going to try to prove. And then it's up to the jurors to say, no, this guy is lying. He was completely competent. We want him to go to jail. We think this is a ruse. We don't believe he's.
Okay, perfect. So that explains. So even after a judge accepted, it only means that they can present it, is what you're saying to me, right? I think I lost Shelley. Did I lose you, Shell? I didn't lose her on my dashboard, but I've lost her. She'll be back. Okay, that's what she's explaining, and that's true. Asking more people than usual to come out to court for high-profile cases is common in the United States justice system. Given concerns, many of them already know the story and have strong opinions about it, which will be hard to weed through. In Florida, for example, there was a 500-person jury pool for the now-ongoing murder trial of George Zimmerman, who was accused of killing a teenager, Trayvon Martin, a case that drew national headlines for weeks. So, too, of course, did what happened just after midnight, the night of July 20th, 2012, in the Denver suburb of Aurora. It was then and there, authorities say, that a man walked through an exit door into a crowded Theater 9 of the Century Movie Complex as a late-night premiere of the Batman sequel, The Dark Knight Rises, played. The former neuroscience graduate student wore all black, a ballistic helmet, a tactical ballistic vest, protective leggings, a throat and groin protector, and a gas mask, police say. He carried an arsenal that included 2 Glock handguns, an AR-15 rifle, a shotgun, and 6,295 rounds of ammunition. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, Agent Steve Beggs, has testified to the truth and to the fact that all of this is true. He didn't care who he killed, Prosecutor Karen Pearson told a judge during a preliminary court hearing in January, adding Holmes chose his venue carefully to cage his victims. He intended to kill them all. After the carnage and Holmes' subsequent capture outside the theater, he was charged with 166 counts of murder, attempted murder, and weapons violations. Rescue workers weren't prepared for the chaos after the Aurora shooting. Since his arrest, much of the in-court discussion has revolved around Holmes' mental state. Judge Seymour, earlier this month, accepted the defense's plea of not guilty by reason of insanity. He was then taken to the Colorado Mental Health Institute in Pueblo for evaluation and is expected to be back in Arapahoe County Jail on August 2nd. Prosecutors in Arapahoe County announced in April they would seek the death penalty. Despite the notoriety of the mass shooting, the judge ruled Thursday that the impaneled jury will not be sequestered, as Holmes' defense team requested, making it so they couldn't go home throughout the prolonged trial. Seymour said was an unnecessary, drastic, expensive, and impractical remedy that will create an extreme and undue hardship for the jurors. I agree. The judge also ruled against the defense's attempt to prevent jurors from using phones or computers, barring their use in court, but saying preventing them from using them outside is unreasonable and unfair. One thing jurors won't be able to see is restraints on Holmes, which is kind of amusing, seeing how it's all over the internet that he's going to have them on, so they'll know it. But maybe there is, some kind of psychological reason for not letting them see them. As someone accused of multiple violent crimes, Seymour says that Holmes must be restrained carefully during his trial. But the judge said he needn't wear handcuffs or shackles. Instead, the judge ruled, Holmes will wear a harness under his clothing, which will not be visible to the jury and will be anchored to the floor. Now, because I looked up so many of these things, let me see if Shelley's back. Because I looked up so many of these things, I found lots of comments and got comments. I called people and talked to them. Are you back, Shel?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. But I wanted to read some of the comments. It's amazing how people feel so differently about things.
Mm-hmm.
His attorneys have offered to plead guilty in exchange for life without parole. Now that he has been cleared to plead insanity, it's time to let him plead guilty and take life without parole. What a waste of time and money to try someone who clearly craves attention. Take his guilty plea, throw away the key, and forget about him. Sadly, they just want him to die. I agree, it is a huge, massive waste of money since he offered to plead guilty. And when you throw in his appeals, will be going on for years if he gets sentenced to death, and the victims' families will have to read about it on a daily basis. Had they accepted the guilty plea, he would have already been forgotten about. There is no real justice served until he's dead and thrown in an unmarked grave. If they want to save a great deal of time and money, they can just give me a call. I wouldn't hesitate in the least in showing Holmes how I gained my nickname. I'd pay my own airfare to get there, too. Wow, that's kind of scary. There would be a real justice if this were to occur. This mockery of justice and the mushy judicial system plays at lately is a complete waste of resources and everyone's time. Due process is only for people who have a 50-50 chance to prove they did nothing wrong. Anyone that even has a shred of common sense knows very well this is certainly not the case where Holmes is concerned. How much of the public's money will be spent on this piece of garbage so that he and his attorney can get the publicity they crave? It goes, you know, there is no one that feels that this is a smart idea. I've lived long enough to have watched the rules be bent to cater to criminals. I have seen the system change with my own eyes over the years and find it to be completely imbalanced. The disconnect is that people want to treat genuine monsters as though they are a dog who bit someone. Say what you will, but the Constitution was also written in a time when they executed murderers more frequently and didn't coddle monsters. They also were not releasing known murderers back into the streets in less than 30 years, as they do now with many of them that are in prison right now. That is a simple fact. The mushy mockery of justice that's been happening more and more as of late is not right. So what do you propose? Let it continue to grow more lax until people who kill others only get a 10-month stint at a health spa? So the contention, as you can see, is not one of any kind of, I didn't find one that agrees with doing a trial for this person at all.
Right.
I found it gets worse and worse, and then, of course, people argue amongst themselves as what happens in a lot of these sites that I find comments where they're allowed to comment. So by lawyers earning money, there's a problem. Isn't that kind of what you're supposed to do when you enter a career? And I largely believe that the government, be it county, state, federal, is administered by its respective judicial system. So my guess is that person is a lawyer or works in the arena somehow.
Right.
But we have rule of law. Due process is part of that process. It is not about him. It is about preserving our way of life and to ensure we do not become the very kind of state we pretend to loathe. Now, I like that paragraph. I don't think it's the whole truth, though. I agree with that, don't you? We have rule of law. Due process is part of that process.
Right.
It's not about him. It's about preserving our way of life and to ensure we do not become the very kind of state we pretend to loathe. I don't disagree with that at all. I just think that, I want that too. I'm sure we all do. We all want due process. We all want to know that, like I said in the very beginning, that we're innocent until we're proven guilty. And I agree with that. I think that's the way it should be. But like I'm saying, in some cases, I mean, if you're standing there with a knife in your hand and blood all over you, you did something wrong.
But see, and that's the problem, Rainey. What you just said is the problem. Do you know, Doc, we should do a show on this one time. Do you know the percentage of people that have been convicted for murder and put on death row, and after they were executed, they were found to be innocent because they found the actual killer? There are actually statistics for that, all right? You walk into a house. You see your loved one laying on the floor with a knife. You rush over. You pull the knife out. You try to revive them. You get their blood all over you. You had a fight with this person earlier in the morning, and three people saw it, right? Your neighbors had already heard a commotion and called the police. The police get there while you're trying to revive your loved one, and the knife's got your fingerprints on it, and you've got blood all over you. This has happened. This is real. They've actually made movies about it, right? Meanwhile, somebody else was there 10 minutes earlier and actually committed the crime and took off, and you're the one with the bloody knife in your hand and blood all over you saying, I didn't do it, I didn't do it, and everybody thinks you're nuts, okay? These type of things have happened, okay? That's what O.J. Simpson tried to say happened, and in his case, it wasn't true, but the bottom line is it has happened for other people. So being caught with the smoking gun or the bloody knife does not make you guilty. And they have had people that have been sentenced to death row. They have gone through due process of law, that the evidence appeared to be overwhelming, and then they were found out after they were executed that, in fact, they were innocent all along because they found the real killer or other evidence produced. Once now that they have all DNA evidence, they've been able to prove people innocent after the fact, you know. And meanwhile, people have sat in jail for a decade or more or actually succumbed to being executed and then were found out to be innocent. So, you know, our judicial system is supposed to be able to afford justice. But unfortunately, justice is fleeting a lot of times because it's an overly procedural process. You have to understand, when this was first created, our society wasn't as massive as it is. There weren't as many types of crimes back then. You know, you're talking about a time when people would just, you know, like the authorities would just grab people up and either throw them in jail or execute them without any due process. There was no due process at law, you know. And then laws were created to provide the ability for people to get what was a fair trial, you know. You couldn't have a law enforcement individual catch somebody supposedly in the act and just on that word alone sentence that person to somebody, because there were mitigating factors, like the example I just gave, coming in and finding the bloody knife and all that. A lot of times there are mitigating factors, and even an eyewitness account doesn't really give you the whole story. You have somebody who's mentally deranged, out of their mind, insane. Maybe they're on a drug, a prescription drug, and a lot of prescription drugs today for depressions and things like that actually create violent behavior, okay? But not everybody had that reaction. So now you have this individual who's severely depressed, takes a pharmaceutical drug, it flips them out into somebody that they're not, or they kill three people. That person should not be subject to the same punishment as somebody who is a sociopath and just got angry because somebody ripped them off and now he's going to make them pay, and he goes and he shoots up a bunch of innocent people. You're talking about two different mindsets. One person.
Okay, but you're also everything you just explained, I get and I agree with. But I'm talking about standing with a knife in your hand. I'm not talking about after the fact. I've read those stories too, and I've seen those Law and Orders, and I've I know that it's happened out there where somebody looks very guilty. But I'm talking about people who say, yes, I did it. I have no qualms about, you know, like this guy. He did it. And he's trying to say now that he's crazy. And they accepted the opportunity to prove that he's crazy. But in many cases, the people are standing there. They've watched them shoot the gun. All these witnesses have seen everything. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about somebody who's alone and there's only two people and you walk in and you have to prove that what he's saying, I took the knife out of my wife, like the scenario you just gave. If that's his story, then he has the opportunity to prove that story. And you have the opportunity to prove he's lying. I'm not disputing that. I'm disputing when it's a cut and dried case of somebody going wacky and going in and shooting a whole bunch of people. And like I said, in most cases that I've tried to research, they take their own life or they get shot or get killed somehow in. Well, let's look at the two bombers, the two young men who bombed everybody in Boston. And I mean, they actually did things that I thought was worse. In some cases, the one story, the two brothers both lost legs, and I mean, it was horrific. And they ran, and the one brother gets killed, and now the other brother, he's going to have a big trial. And everybody knows he's responsible for doing it. And he's not saying he's not guilty. He's saying, I did it because I had a reason to do it. But we're still going to spend the money to have everybody rehash everything that happened and all the victims' families and all that kind of stuff. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about,
The trial is there's a couple of things the trial is for. The trial is, number one, to say that they're guilty on a particular charge. So they'll present a bunch of different charges. Like you see, like the murder trials, they have several levels. They could say not guilty on this particular charge, but guilty over here. And what they're saying they're guilty for may carry a larger or a lesser penalty to it. You know, if they say, no, this person is guilty of manslaughter instead of first-degree murder, well, manslaughter is going to have a lesser penalty attached to it, a shorter jail time or whatever. And I don't think there would ever be a death penalty on a manslaughter charge. Then you're going into first-degree murder and things like that to have a death penalty on the table. You know, so the punishments are different degrees. So it even if somebody is absolutely guilty, it's still up to the jury now to say at what degree they're guilty. Was this premeditated? So there's all these different shades of gray in the law, and that's one of the reasons. I absolutely believe that our judicial system is tripping over itself. I think it's become too convoluted. I think there should not be negotiations allowed, all right? If you have somebody that is going to be, like say you have somebody that should be, let's get away from murder for a minute because then that brings a lot more into it. Let's just say somebody is going to be convicted of grand larceny. You know, they stole something that's worth $20,000, okay? And they plead down to some sort of a misdemeanor, petty theft or something like that. Why is that allowed? Why are they allowed pleading down? Okay, so you have somebody that now committed this crime, but because they have enough money to pay their lawyers to negotiate with this whole thing, now they're getting a lesser penalty. If you stole something that's grand larceny, you should have to suffer the penalty of grand larceny. Just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you should be able to negotiate that away. And somebody else who has no attorney now has to do the full boat because they don't have an attorney that knows how to negotiate. The law should be the law. It shouldn't be subjective to somebody who has the ability to play with the system. And that's what people do. It becomes a game. You know. So either you have laws that are enforced or you don't have laws that are enforced. But to enforce them, you know, based on, like the O.J. Simpson is a perfect example you gave before, okay? He really played the system. Mm-hmm. You know, just kept throwing confusion in there, and then look what happened with that whole trial. I mean, what nonsense, you know, because he just kept muddying the waters and muddying the waters and muddying the waters to the point where the jurors couldn't even make a clear decision anymore. You know, meanwhile, the rest of the world was sitting there gasping when the judgment finally came out after all that time and money was spent, you know? I think it crippled the judicial system by allowing this constant negotiation. I don't think plea bargains should be permitted. I think that it should be cleaner. I think that we have laws. If somebody is going to do the crime, they should be willing to pay, you know, to do the time then. It's that simple. And it's not that way. And I don't think it was the inception as laws were being made that people were going to be able to negotiate their way around them and play with the system the way they do. But on the other hand, I also think that we have a responsibility to really, really look at situations and hear people out. I just think that there should be less game playing, that it should be a little bit more of a direct effort. And when you listen to facts, you know, like I said, there are extenuating circumstances. When you look at the motive of what somebody did, you have somebody who kills another man just because they had an argument over a business deal, or you have one man kill another man because he harmed his child in some way, you've got completely different motivations. Same crime, different motivations. All right? If you have a man, if you have somebody...
Yes, but Shelley, that doesn't come into play in a courtroom. That very rarely comes into play. No, it very, very rarely comes in to play. It can be mentioned. It can be talked about. But you can't, you know, it's like the crime of passion. And when the man comes into a bedroom and finds his wife in bed with his best friend and he shoots them both. There have been times in our history when that man has gotten a free ride because people believe that. So now there's very little of the opportunity to give a background. You either did or you didn't. You may not take another person's life. So, yes, there's always extenuating circumstances, always. But we talked about this with the mothers that killed their children, the women that have got postpartum depression. And 60 years ago, they were called baby blues and get over it. Do you remember the night that I read the stories about how many people were in state mental institutions because they couldn't get over the loss of a child
in a certain
amount of time? So they institutionalized those women. Yeah, there's not. It would be nice if there were more opportunities to explain why somebody commits the acts they commit. But you're given very little of that. You're given very, very little of that because you still can't.
Because I've watched court shows. I mean, I'm talking real court shows, like the ones that are recorded on the, you're watching a trial live. And I hear these attorneys go into great detail as far as to the motive and the circumstances, and they'll just hammer witnesses.
Motive, yes. Motive, they have to talk about, but they can't talk about the feelings of others because they don't know the feelings of others. They get stopped and pulled in their tracks.
But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the man. I was making an example of these two guys. This goes to their motives, all right? If one man had a child that was molested by the person he killed, his motive is totally different than the other guy who just got screwed in a business deal and was pissed off and premeditated.
Absolutely, that's true.
They should not get the same punishment, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I know, because you think like a human being. You don't think with all the laws and all the things that have been written for so many years that no longer pertain to us. Because you're thinking like a level-headed person. And very sadly, that doesn't play into it. It's like, I wish it was like that, more like that. You can show motive, but you can't make, I think you molested my child, so I snuck into your house one day and took your life. I'm still in trouble. I'm still in trouble.
I'm talking about it with passion, because premeditated murder, and let me be clear about here, if somebody did do that, you can't take somebody else's life regardless of what
exactly.
They did.
Exactly.
All it does is perpetuate the violence. I'm not talking about somebody that premeditatedly went out for revenge. I'm talking about in the moment, they're outside the courtroom, the guy got off for something, and the person whose child was harmed couldn't deal with the verdict, and in a moment of just rage, shot him. It was in the heat of the moment, he couldn't handle, what happened to his child. I don't think that person who just lost it should have. I think that there should be a punishment. I don't think he should get off, because you can't just harm somebody. But I also think that when it's wrapped around some sort of mental aberration, it has to be dealt with differently. Now, this guy that did the shooting at the theater, unless he did it as a contract killer and he just did it cold-heartedly, I think he has to be nuts. What was his motive? Has anybody yet said what his motive was for going in there? What was the reason for shooting up all these innocent people? Because I haven't heard that yet.
Only that his intent was to kill all of them. And I'm absolutely positively sure he's nutty as a fruitcake. Yeah, I mean, look at him. He personifies everything about looking like a nutcase. But
does he ever say that somebody told him to do it? Or, was it God speaking to him?
I've never, in everything that I've watched with him, I've never even heard his voice. So I don't believe so. But he, again, he admits to doing it. He admits to doing it. And the people now that are representing him, a state's attorney, is saying that, he needs to plead insanity. Anybody that would cover themselves in all that attire that I read about and everything and walk in and be armed with all that stuff and have his hair bright orange and all the different things that he did. But there's been no talk that I have seen or could find anything about a history of anybody hurting him, or I'm sure at some point in time we'll find out something that, happened to him, because usually people that are that unbalanced have had something unkind or harmful happen to them, I'm sure. But
well,
the point
not,
is...
I'm not stating this as a fact, but I think that I had read, I'm making it clear that I'm not stating this as a fact because I'm not sure, but I think one of the articles that I had read, and this is going back months ago, is that he was on some psychiatric medication. And he had either taken too many or not enough or whatever, but that he was on prescription psychiatric medication at the time that he did this. And I'm gonna need to pursue that and confirm it. So, like I said, I'm not stating it as a fact, but I seem to recall that shortly, like within a week or two of the actual incident, that they had made a comment about, and I forget which one they said it was, but that he was on one of these psychiatric meds.
Well, that's entirely possible. I didn't see anything like that in the research I did yesterday. Nothing along those lines about him being on medication, and none of the things that I read this morning talked about that. And that's entirely possible, judging by the way he looked. And, I mean, we've talked about this 100 times. When somebody just randomly goes in and starts shooting somebody, they're cuckoo. I mean, you know, maybe they're not cuckoo all the time, but they've lost it for the time being. A sane, rational person does not go in and just shoot perfect strangers. It's it's not in our makeup. We're not predators at heart like that. It's not about that for us. So we have to be, you know, we've lost sight of our own personal sanity for whatever reasons, whether or not it's been a long time coming, whether or not it's an old scar. But the whole idea of today's show is to talk about the fact that all the money trouble that we're in, all the financial problems that our government is in, and yet, you heard what I said, they're going to call in 5,000 people. All those people get paid for coming in. That bill alone is going to be staggering.
Well, you don't get paid for going in. You only get paid if you serve. You don't get paid for going in the jury selection part of it. You don't get paid for that.
No, no. But, well, but if you get, if you keep getting brought in for 3 days, I think they give you like $7.50 or something like that a day if they keep bringing you in and bringing you back. That's why they do the call thing now. I don't know. I think every state is has its own stuff, or maybe even every city.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you're right. But I never went past the third day, so I never got that. But, yeah, I seem to remember something about that. Or if your company wasn't paying you, you got a little bit of, you're right
you
about
could
that.
Get... You could, yeah, that's the way that works. And, well, I got subpoenaed for something that I'm involved in. And just to go do my subpoena, they pay me $7.50.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Huh, that surprises me. Well, yeah, so that's a good example of how the costs just get overblown. I mean, you've heard of trials, and they say, oh, this trial is going to cost $1 million. And you're like, how can it possibly cost $1 million? But then when you look at all the different people that they have to pay, they even have to pay the court system in order to be able to use the courtroom and all this. It's just nuts, you know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And like I said, in a courtroom, you've got bailiffs, you've got stenographers, you've got clerks, you've got, in any courtroom where, say, where they're just handling misdemeanors or people coming in because they have a traffic violation and they're going to fight it. If you sit in that courtroom, there's usually, if it's a big enough courtroom to hold, like, say, 30 people in the audience, and there's a prisoner bench with, like, maybe 12 seats, 15 seats, something like that, up front with the judge, there's his clerk that sits beside him. On the other side of him is another clerk who does whatever. I have no idea what they do. There's the stenographer. There's somebody who, there's usually two bailiffs for the front and the back of the house. And then there's always somebody who takes care of you if you've got to have another court date. And the girl up by the judge puts that on a piece of paper, and then somebody who's sitting down at the lower level does the paperwork and gives that to the person that has to come back again. I mean, it's a business, and it's run like an office, a courtroom. And there's all kinds of staff in there taking care of everybody. And then forget about all the lawyers that are hired by people that are private lawyers, and then you have all of the representatives from the state attorney's office, and you have all of the other young lawyers who are there to represent clients that don't have any money. So it's a crowded room. There's a lot of money going out in a day like that. And some of it is not necessary, was my whole point, just not necessary. And I agree that there's always extenuating circumstances. Everything in life has extenuating circumstances. And I do believe, though, that for whatever reasons, you know, we have to cut back on some of that stuff. We're in trouble. And now this morning on the news, they said, still no end in sight for the government shutdown. I don't know why, and I don't know if this has affected you. I live in the acreage. The regular garbage people have stopped picking up our garbage. We put our garbage out last week to be picked up on Wednesday, and a different truck that, first of all, I saw Solid Waste Authority out there in a white truck, and he's stopping up and down the road, and there was like, I don't know, on Orange Grove, there was several people with garbage out. On my street, on my little section of street, there were two people that didn't get their garbage picked up, us and somebody else. Then the next day, another truck, like a private garbage company, came and picked up our garbage. We put the garbage out for pickup on Saturday, and my garbage is still sitting out front. And
yeah, no,
several
people. I got a notice in the mail that they changed carriers recently, and that the schedule has been changed. So if you didn't get the notice, I can give you the phone number to call. But I had actually gotten a notice in my mail 2 weeks ago that they were changing my pickup days. Because my recycling is picked up on a different day now, and my regular garbage is picked up on a different day. So it could be that you just didn't get the notice. I don't know why some people got it and some people didn't, but I know that not everybody got the notice, but I did. But it was like a bulk mailer. It wasn't something that was like stuck on my mailbox. It was a bulk mailer, so it's possible it got lost in the mail. But there's a phone number on there to call if you're not sure what the deal is, you know. So I can get
yeah
it.
Because but
they said that the SWA, which is the South Florida Water
Solid Waste Authority,
they took over the contract, whatever. I mean, it's a little letter, and I didn't read the whole thing. All I wanted to know was what days they were picking my stuff up. So, but I did read the top line saying that SWA took over the contract. So, yeah, so they're taking it. They're not really part of the government, I don't believe. I think they are independent, which is probably why.
I think Solid Waste Authority has something to do with the county, which would have something to do probably governmentally. I'm not sure either, Shelley. But I think usually because if it's a holiday, they don't pick up garbage. That usually tends to mean that they're a part of the government. But there are other garbage trucks. And I saw when they picked it up finally last week, it was a different truck that I'd never seen before, and I did not retain what it said on the side of the truck. I just knew it wasn't SWA. And the big truck that was out there writing notes, he was SWA. But like I said, some of them got picked up. So it doesn't even make sense.
Unless the people had put their garbage out after, maybe the trucks came really, really early or something, and maybe they just missed those people's houses. Because that happened to me.
See, ours gets put out the night before.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Mhm. So anyway, that's a whole other story. But
here.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll read it to you later. But it does say that Waste Pro is now the exclusive service provider, and yet it's got an SWA logo at the bottom, so I don't know if all that's about. Well, I'll show it to you later because it might be something interesting to look into. But the bottom line is I get what you're saying, and I completely agree with you, all right? When jury trials first came into being, it was because so many people had been railroaded for crimes they didn't commit. Some people were lynched or hanged or whatever for crimes they didn't commit, all right? So jury trials came into being so that there wouldn't be vigilante justice, basically, okay? Because you know, a lot of times you think so-and-so did it or whatever, or what, you know, whatever, and then you find out after you've done something terrible to this person that they were innocent all along, you know, because it's never provided justice. So it was a way to control the anarchy, the, you know, the wild, wild west, the, you know, people just taking justice into their own hands. But it's almost like the pendulum swung the other way now. We've created a system that's so convoluted and complicated and heavily laden with other tasks that we're still not serving justice anymore. You know, you're still having people that are innocent being found guilty. You're having people that are guilty getting off because they have the money to just muddy the water so much. So it's definitely a crippled system, and it's a very costly system. I absolutely agree with you on that. You know, but how do you fix it? How do you still try to provide some level of justice for people without railroading people, listening to mitigating circumstances, listening to the whole story? You know, are you going to take somebody who is in fact insane and give them the same penalty as somebody who is just a sociopath and went out there because they got pissed off and they wanted to get revenge and it was premeditated? You know, so it really is a very, very large subject.
Well, I think for starters, somebody who has, first of all, the education and the internal smarts and the ability to really listen and pay attention to what's going on needs to hear stories first. And then there needs to be an assessment as to what goes forward and what doesn't go forward. And whether that's a group of people, a committee of people, something. Instead of, you know, it's like, and I'll say this again because this so fits me, if you'll excuse the pun, one size does not fit all. I don't care what you're talking about. One size does not fit all. And very sadly, when we make a law that's written law, they try to make it fit all, and it doesn't. There's always variables, like you just said. Well, what about the person who, you know, who killed the guy that raped his daughter? Yeah, who wouldn't agree with that? But still not okay. It's still not okay. Do we understand why he did it? Hell yes, we do. But it's still not okay. Or what about the man who comes in and his wife is in bed with his best friend? Do we understand that he's angry? It's still not okay to take the life of somebody else. It's still not okay to walk in any place and hurt anybody for any reason. The mother who hurts their children on a continuum, not just once, maybe not just take their child's life, but the mother who beats on their kid every day, or the father who beats on their wife or their child and their wife. It's not okay. And there has to be laws. That we get that. We get that. All I'm saying is that when something is cut and dried, obviously cut and dried, and this James Holmes is a perfect scenario. Maybe he shouldn't be put on death row. Maybe he should be put in an insane asylum, but with the stipulation that he never gets out.
Right.
That he stays there because he's never going to be all right, because he's, first of all, his insanity has led him to do a horrible thing and ruin the lives of many, many, many people. So he's got to pay for that. Because there's still old adages like, you know, if you play, you're going to pay. And, you know, if you're going to do certain things, you have to face the music. That's just the way it is. And those laws are a part of who we are and what we are. They're not laws that people sat down and wrote years ago. Oh, you got to go before a judge, and you've got to have this many days. We need to rectify all those. They don't ring true with us anymore.
Plus, like I said before, we have laws that say if you do this, you get this penalty, and then some attorney can creatively negotiate that and plea bargain it away anyway. So,
well,
that's another issue.
The word creative is an awesome word. And I'd love to be creative myself. But in law, there shouldn't be any creativity allowed. And I don't know what we're going to ever do about that, because it will always be, because there's so many people involved. But we're out of time. I want to first give a big shout out to my second-born son, Michael Robert Brewer Sr. Today is his birthday. Happy birthday, and I love you. And we're going to have a little party on Sunday at Quiet Waters Park to celebrate Michael's birthday, Mike Jr.'s birthday, and my youngest son David's birthday. So if you're listening out there and you know this family, you're more than invited to come. So have a great day, everybody. Shell, we'll talk later. Yep. Have a wonderful day, everybody. God bless, and talk to you tomorrow morning.
All right.
Bye,
Take care, Shell. Good day.